The fake news wars that we're experiencing right now are not going to end soon.
Terry Mattingly on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, making the case for news discernment.
We're actually seeing a war to define what is and what isn't news. This whole thing is about the purpose of journalism and whether the classic American model of the press, with its whole emphasis on balance and fairness, is going to survive the internet age. What we'll be talking about is where savvy readers can go to get their news. We're also going to ask, what happens to American public discourse if we all keep on clicking on news sources that only tell us what we want to hear?
You can meet and hear Terry Mattingly June 9th and 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385.
For too long, the federal government has used the power of the state as a weapon against people of faith, bullying and even punishing Americans for following their religious beliefs. It's been happening. That is why I am signing today an executive order to defend the freedom of religion and speech in America, the freedoms that we've wanted, the freedoms that you fought for so long.
This is promoting and the promotion of free speech and religious liberty. That's a big one. That's as big as it gets, right?
That's President Trump of the Rose Garden signing an executive order today called Promoting Free Speech and Religious Liberty. Sounds good. What does it contain? We don't quite know yet, although going on air here, I was seeing some social media buzz from some respected conservative critics saying it doesn't go far enough, it doesn't say much. How has it been covered, and how will we compare what President Trump said he would give by way of executive orders protecting free speech and what he has today? And, well, if you're going to go someplace to read about it, where would you go and which news outlets should you probably skip? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly joins us here for the first half hour. We're going to talk about media coverage of President Trump's executive order on religious liberty. Then we're going to spend some time with Dr. Jennifer Oback-Morse of the Ruth Institute. She's written recently for Crisis Magazine the story of, well, let's just call it feminist baggage. It's really hard, once brought into the feminist mindset, to rid yourself of it. She tells her story a little bit there, and we'll hear what she has to say. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us. We'll talk about on-screen villains. He's a senior contributor to The Federalist. And then in Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us to continue our trek through Hosea in the Old Testament, our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Feel free to join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MY-IE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line 618-223-8382. Terry Mattingly joins us. We're going to talk about media coverage of President Trump's executive order on religious liberty. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I've sat in this chair for a long time, and I have witnessed many presidential campaigns. I can't think of a Democratic candidate for the presidency who hasn't, on a Sunday morning while running for president, got into the pulpit and spoken there on a Sunday morning at an African-American church. Why does the press not cover this very regular occurrence as a possible violation of the Johnson Amendment?
Well, I think the best way to word that concern is to say, why don't they cover it more? There has been, you know, some scattered concern about whether that's a Johnson Amendment violation. And then you have black ministers who carefully word that to say, now I'm standing up here only speaking for myself. You know, they'll say something like that, which would be exactly what Jerry Falwell Jr. said at Liberty University when introducing Donald Trump and then saying that I personally endorse him. So you've got people that know how to use that wording. You have other cases in African-American settings and in, frankly, other nonprofits. Everybody forgets that the Johnson Amendment is not just about religious groups. It's about nonprofit groups in general. So that would include a whole lot of environmental groups, labor safety groups, healthcare groups. A lot of other folks are involved in that. But I think it's very important when people are reading the coverage, and this is one of the things I stressed in my preliminary piece this morning before the ceremony that ran at Get Religion, I think it's very important for people to understand first that the overwhelming majority, even of conservative ministers in America, are in favor of the Johnson Amendment. There was a poll by the National Association of Evangelicals a couple of months ago that showed that 89% of the clergy contacted by the National Association of Evangelicals favored the Johnson Amendment. So you also need to know that the Johnson Amendment is specifically, well, there's been some horrible wordings on this in coverage this morning. The Johnson Amendment specifically covers whether or not you can endorse a candidate or a political party. Now, there have been many instances in the past where people on the cultural left and political left have come after, let's say, the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference and have claimed that they don't have the right to make statements opposing abortion on demand or any other thing, or expressing doubts about how Catholics might be able to vote in ways that favor abortion rights. Now, the Johnson Amendment does not address or prevent religious groups or other nonprofits from being able to speak out on issues that are directly linked to their mission. And there's a whole lot of subjects in this world that are related to Christian theology. I mean, everything from, obviously, the environment, labor, safety laws, war and peace, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There have been, you know, tons of commentaries by all kinds of religious groups. Billy Graham in a couple of elections recently, you know, has had his organization with Franklin Graham pushing the buttons to some degree, but there have been statements from Billy Graham consistent with things he said in the past where he said, you should vote for people who try to protect life, you know, or vague language like that. That is not the endorsement of an individual candidate. I mean, so once again, it would be really interesting to know who it was who came up with the idea of making a big deal out of crushing the Johnson Amendment. Who wanted this to happen is what I'm trying to say.
Well, maybe another way to ask it with perhaps a different answer is who is celebrating today the president's executive order on religious freedom?
I've been watching Twitter very carefully, and there are a lot of people who are saying, thank you for saying something good about religious liberty. When are we going to see the details? And the last time I checked, I'm not sure the actual text of the executive order is online yet. So to some degree, people are still guessing based on what Trump says this says. And as you and I discussed a long time ago, even in the situation with refugees, what Trump said his action was all about, it ended up that the executive order was quite different. And in fact, the executive order was better than what he said, you know, if you were looking for some sort of equitable treatment of refugees. And in particular, if you wanted to see if it really was an anti-Muslim order, and it turned out to be a little bit more complex than that. So to some degree, we shouldn't be saying anything until we read the executive order. But it's clear at this point, I've been hunting ever since that Rose Garden ceremony. I've been trying to figure out who's celebrating, and I can't find anybody who's jumping up and down and saying this is a tremendous move that's really going to help the religious liberty conflicts that matter the most. Nobody.
So let's talk a little bit about the media coverage of this leading up to it. And you actually say there's one media outlet not worth reading, and there's one that probably is the one not worth reading, USA Today. You just suggest we skip.
Skip it.
Why?
Well, I mean, there's nothing new in it, and there's several things in it that are the same old when it comes to errors about some of these issues. The New York Times did a much better job this time, and I specifically noted that this particular article, they allowed their veteran religion reporter to be involved in the coverage, and my suspicion is that immediately improved the copy. They put at the very top of the story that many conservative groups, Catholic groups, Mormon groups, whatever, the coalition of people who are truly worried about religious liberty didn't think that this action today did much of anything at all. They managed to get that element high up in the story, where the USA Today article, once again, was your basic idea, gosh, the evangelicals love Trump. He owed them this, and now he's come through. When you look on Twitter, you see immediately that it's a lot more complex than that. And there are some very, very important evangelicals and groups who are saying, once again, thank you for this little bit of pro-liberty language, but what did this actually accomplish? What did it do? And what issues did it refuse to address?
Okay. Since we don't know what the actual executive order is, and in particular, we don't know how it differs from what was promised or what was said would be in an executive order. Let's just
during the campaign, what he promised in the campaign, for example.
And many people are going to say, well, it's probably going to fall short of that. What was promised to you, the best of your recollection?
Well, there were statements that, you know, that indicated that Trump understood that the degree to which religious nonprofits and religious groups could practice their faith in concrete ways. And of course, the big word here is discrimination. We're back to the issue of the RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and bills that were based on it. And the press consistently words this is that religious groups were seeking the ability for religious people to discriminate against gays and lesbians. Discriminate against gays and lesbians. That phrase is supposed to sum it all up, when the actual issues discussed in RFRA are more complex. I know we've talked about it before, but it's important for our listeners to understand. The case involving the florist up in the Pacific Northwest remains the best one to consider. No one has accused that woman of consistent discrimination against gays and lesbians, even those who serve on her staff. And the customer who eventually accused her of discrimination was someone she had dealt with as a customer for many years. I think it's something like a decade. But what happened here was the customer came in and requested that she do the flowers for his same-sex wedding. At that point, she said, on that specific issue linked to a religious event from the viewpoint of my faith, I do not in good conscience feel that I can take part. They then sued, and you know the rest of the story. But once again here, note the difference between consistent discrimination against a class of people versus a very narrowly defined single act of discrimination based on a religious belief linked to something that can be considered a religious issue, a religious practice, in this case, a wedding. That distinction between those two different levels and forms of discrimination are at the heart of RFRA. And being able to make a RFRA case does not guarantee you'll win, but RFRA allows you to at least make that case that this narrowly defined act of discrimination was rooted in religious conviction in this single instance or in a single type of instance. You just don't see this explained in any of these stories, and that's happening again, you know, in the coverage today. It's kind of like the other thing that the press never mentions that we talk about a lot, or until this New York Times piece today, it didn't get talked about much, which is that there are lots of very conservative, pro-religious people, religious liberty people, who have been quite critical of Trump and are even critical of some of his promises and actions. We're back into this situation where supposedly all evangelicals love Trump. And you can't cover this story today without understanding that some of the best criticism of this decision is coming from religious conservatives as well as from religious and secular liberals. That's a crucial element of the story. And when the big reports come out tomorrow morning, that's something that our listeners should look for. Whenever you get to read about these stories, did it capture the voices of conservative religious people who were concerned about what was in and what was not in that executive order today? In other words, to turn your question around, who isn't celebrating right now?
And it's not like these people are hiding under a rock. You mentioned a few. You mentioned David. These are regular guests. David French, Russell Moore, and a whole cadre of kind of lesser lights who are, I think, almost constantly, at least in social media, making their views known, both conservative and in many ways critical of President Trump.
Right. I mean, and just even read between the lines of the press release that came out, say, from the Beckett Fund, or the Alliance for Freedom, is quoted in the New York Times story, if I got the exact name of that organization correct. But read between the lines. The Beckett Fund today, the headline on their press release after the ceremony was that this constituted some much-needed support for the Little Sisters of the Poor and other religious groups on the contraceptive mandate, the HHS. And when I look through what is supposed to be in this order, I agree with that. Of all the things that Trump is in a position to order people to do or not do, that might be the most substantive thing that's in the executive order, is him simply saying, putting more wood on the fire, telling federal agencies and telling legal agencies, this is the position of the government, don't punish these people, you know, under the Health and Human Services mandate. There's a little bit of weight to that claim, that's a good thing from my perspective. And that has made it into the New York Times report. And, you know, people will be reading the New York Times. I just also read the Washington Post story that came out after the Rose Garden ceremony. And it was co-written by Sarah Pulliam Bailey. And it has some good material on this, noting where this order is basically symbolism and God talk, happy talk language versus where it might actually have some impact, and agreeing that the HHS mandate is where it might have some impact.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. We're talking about media coverage of President Trump's executive order on religious liberty. We'll talk about the absence of scare quotes in the Washington Post coverage after this.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference? you can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $120 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $120 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
You'll find major discounts on previous Issues Etc. books of the month during Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale, May 4th through the 7th. The Defense Never Rests by Craig Parton for $5. Celebrating the Saints by Will Wheaton for $14.99. Hello, My Name is Single by Adrian Dorr Heinz for $7. Hundreds of items reduced during Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale, May 4th through the 7th. CPH.org, CPH.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking to Terry Mattingly about media coverage of President Trump's executive order on religious liberty. Terry is senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion, and he'll be making the case for news discernment at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Terry will be joined by Chris Roseborough, Matt Harrison, Aaron Wolf, Peter Bender, and Todd Peppercorn. Attendance for the Making the Case Conference is limited to 400 people. Now, if you plan on flying, you want to fly into Lambert Airport in St. Louis. Collinsville is about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June the 9th and Saturday, June the 10th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. Terry, one of the things you were talking about before the break about the Washington Post piece, one of the things that was missing from that was the typical scare quotes that the media usually puts around terms like religious liberty. Why do they do this? And if you would briefly explain how journalists are supposed to use quotation marks.
You mean what the scare quotes mean?
Well, first, when quotation marks are appropriate in print journalism, and what the scare quotes so often found around religious liberty.
Well, when they put it around there, what they really mean is that these particular people think this has something to do with religious liberty. This is just their opinion. So to make sure that we know this isn't really absolutely, positively, for sure, a religious liberty situation, we're going to put quotes around it. Even though the term religious liberty is a common agreed-upon usage of what it is, and during the Barack Obama administration, the Barack Obama administration itself admitted that we, on these discrimination issues, that we were debating something that was religious liberty. The Obama administration simply disagreed with people about what the action should be. But the Obama administration never disputed in any of these cases that religious liberty was at stake or that this was something being argued within the framework of existing religious liberty law. So in other words, what I'm saying is Barack Obama was not putting scare quotes around the terms religious liberty in these debates. Yet the mainstream press consistently did so and to some degree continues to do so.
So just so we remember either from what freshman high school English or from a journalism course, these quotes are editorial, even though they're punctuation. They are editorial. When is a journalist supposed to put quotes around a word or a phrase?
Oh, well, I mean, just in terms of AP style, you're just making sure that people know that this is a direct quote, that this is the exact words the person spoke. So it said, you know, the Beckett Fund said that religious liberty was at stake. You're putting the words religious liberty in quotes to make sure that the reader knows that this is what the Beckett Fund said. Now, when we describe them as scare quotes, what we're kind of saying is that's the Beckett Fund's opinion that this is a religious liberty issue. That's like putting the word First Amendment, the words First Amendment in quotes, whenever, anytime they're used by an interest group. Well, nobody does that because everybody knows what the First Amendment is. And to some degree, everybody knows what's in it. The issue is whether is how you apply it, or what's a valid application of the First Amendment and what isn't. The Obama administration, like I sit to say it again, they admitted that this was a dispute about religious liberty. No need to put the term religious liberty in quotes. We are talking about religious liberty law. Everybody agrees on that. But the press is going further and saying, no, 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 we're not even sure that these cases have to do with religious liberty. Just these conservative people are claiming they do. And I think one of the things that's up there is that all of a sudden we have a lot of people that, you know, 15 or so years ago, when RFRA was being voted on with the full help and passed with the enthusiastic support of the American Civil Liberties Union, the Clinton-Gore administration, and lots of folks on the left were very, very much in favor of RFRA when it was helping Native Americans be able to have access to certain forms of hallucinogens for religious ceremonies. And everybody agrees that it's religious liberty when you're defending the rights of a Muslim to be able to have a beard that's a certain length while in prison, or Jewish prisoners or Muslim prisoners to be able to have food that fits their dietary needs. Everyone knows that that's religious liberty. It just seems that the minute it has to do with protecting traditional religious believers on any issue that has to do with sex, all of a sudden the religious liberty goes inside quotes. And as I've seen a lot of people use the words, and I've now started using that language myself, we now have collisions between religious liberty, which is in the First Amendment, and sexual liberty, which is, you know, something that you have to get into a whole other level of Supreme Court arguments and cases to be able to read that into the Constitution. So I hope that explains scare quotes. It really is an aggravating and frustrating thing for lots of us. Molly has written some of the great scare quote pieces in history, as have my colleague Bobby Ross Jr. That's a big hot button for him as well.
What changed with regard to both Democratic Party support, and you mentioned the ACLU support for RFRA? When did things change? When did it become a bad thing?
Everybody agrees that this is all about gay rights, that essentially when religious believers began wanting to do anything in public life, especially related to business or even in Christian colleges that accept a pretty wide range of students or faculty members or whatever, everybody agrees that when it began to address the sexual revolution and specifically gay rights, that is when the left bailed completely on religious liberty. There are exceptions out there. There are still people that I would call old-fashioned liberals who consistently stand up for religious liberty, even if they don't agree with the applications. Easily the best known figure in the last month or two who falls into this category would be the gay rights activist and brilliant journalist Andrew Sullivan would be an example of someone who is one of the most important gay rights activists in American and in world culture, American life and world culture. But Andrew Sullivan has begun to speak very consistently in favor of freedom of conscience on religious liberty issues. And as a result, last year, the first time I heard about it, he made a remark like that at a public meeting and was booed by a predominantly gay rights audience for defending religious liberty. So I don't think there's any real question about that at all. Is that this is about the sexual revolution versus traditional interpretations of the First Amendment.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Jennifer Roback Morse will be with us on the other side of the break. She is a one-time feminist, no longer, but she says she still has a little difficulty from time to time shaking the feminist baggage. We'll find out what she means after this.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.